From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Florida is known as the Sunshine State, but it ranks nowhere near the top when it comes to home solar systems. A February article by Bloomberg Business says Florida is 15th in the country for those systems, trailing behind states like Texas and California. The answer as to why Florida is not capitalizing on sunshine comes back to policy and cost. We'll be joined by a panel of guests looking at solar policies in Florida, how large utilities are thinking about solar, and a coalition of people trying to get solar on the ballot. Plus, the Florida legislature convened its annual legislative session this month without passing measures aimed at regulating hydraulic fracturing in Florida, leaving the practice unregulated. We'll explore risks and benefits, efforts to regulate the practice, and the potential future of fracking in the Sunshine State. That's ahead. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Topher Forges. It's May in Florida, and that means stifling heat, humidity, and sun. Bright, bright sun. Across the country, businesses and homes are taking advantage of this renewable resource, so you would expect the Sunshine State to be at the forefront of the push for solar. The U.S. Department of Energy ranks the state behind only two other states in potential for rooftop solar panel systems. And a Bloomberg Business article says this comes as solar technology is becoming even cheaper and utility power rates are expected to grow as much as 83% over the next 25 years. But the article says Florida ranks in the teens nationwide when it comes to the number of solar systems installed in its homes. So why is Florida outpaced by states like Texas and California? The answer, policies and costs. Those are mostly controlled by the Public Service Commission, the state's utility regulators, and the Florida legislature. And then there are the state's large utility companies like Duke Energy and Florida Power and Light, which also have a voice in the conversation. Journalist Eric Barton, a contributor to the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting, wrote an article in April called In Sunshine State, Big Energy Blocks Solar Power. His piece connects the dots between utilities, Public Service Commission, and state regulators. Eric, thank you for being here today.
Hi, Topher. Thanks for having me.
And we are also joined by Republican State Senator Jeff Brandis of St. Petersburg, who sponsored and pushed multiple bills this legislative session dealing with solar energy. Senator Brandis, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And you can join our conversation. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send an email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. So first, we're going to start with policy. And I want to begin with Eric. In your article in Sunshine State, Big Energy Blocks Solar Power, you talk about a 1970s era law that is restricting rooftop solar expansion in Florida. Tell me about that law.
Yeah, basically it's a law that gives local municipality or local utility companies a monopoly to operate in a local in a town. And it makes sense because back before this law, multiple companies could provide you power, which meant multiple lines running through towns. It was a mess. And how this affects solar is that in other states, solar companies can come and put solar panels on your roof and then sell you back the power. That's illegal under the monopoly law in Florida.
And Senator Brandis, this is something that you tried to deal with directly in the legislature this year. It's similar to a ballot initiative being pushed by a broad coalition of solar opponents. Tell me a little bit about that legislation and why you proposed it and sponsored it.
Absolutely. Our legislation would have allowed shopping centers, commercial properties to sell to adjacent properties or to contiguous properties, let's say it that way. So if you're you know, Home Depot and you wanted to put solar on top of your roof, generally the Home Depot won't own that. They'll lease that out to a third party, let them install the solar, and then they will then sell, utilize much of that solar. But the excess power, what do they do with that? You could sell it back to the grid at an extremely discounted price, or you could, via contract, negotiate with your neighbors, a Radio Shack or a Subway or somebody like that that's next door, and let them buy the power from you that's excess. And then to the extent that there would be additional power needs, you could buy those off of the grid from your electric company. But today's laws don't allow you to sell to your neighbors next door. You could either utilize all the power or you have to sell it back to the grid.
And why did you want to see this become law?
So I think that the policy shouldn't be, we shouldn't have a policy that prohibits someone from selling excess power to their neighbors. And so our bill would have allowed that, and I think that's the right policy for the state, and I think that's what you're seeing many states move towards. But I don't think that we should have, as a policy decision, a restriction from selling to adjacent or contiguous property owners.
And how did your bill fare in the legislature?
It didn't fare well. We actually never got a committee hearing. But we think that it's an issue that has been around for years. I'm actually not the first senator to have filed this bill. This bill has been around for many, many years. And we think that the time for this discussion is coming close, and that we're probably it's getting ripe in the legislative process to have this discussion. And I think you're seeing that now, because essentially the people of Florida are rising up and saying, look, if you're not going to do it legislature, we're going to do it via the Constitution. And I'm not a fan of putting things in the Constitution like this. I think they need to go through the legislative process. But, boy, what a wake-up call to have a constitutional amendment on if it gets on the ballot, to have that out there, because I think it forces the conversation.
And Eric, one of the parts of your article is that you sort of highlight this culture within the legislature, or, you know, this notion that solar initiatives and solar legislation does not move. I feel that you make the case that part of this is done in part by campaign contributions by utilities to state campaigns. So how much have utilities donated since 2010 to campaigns?
Yeah, the utilities have donated $25 million to campaigns in Florida since 2010, and that puts them up possibly as the largest donators to political campaigns in Florida, if not the largest, then certainly one of the largest. They have a lot of influence in Tallahassee, and many lawmakers that we spoke to said if they go against the utility companies, they become ostracized in Tallahassee.
Yeah, and I was wondering, you know, what is the sense that you get from state legislators about the role that sort of that those campaign contributions play in talking about the legislature?
I had a lobbyist just recently tell me that, you know, no politician will say I vote a certain way based on a donation, but they will say I don't hear what you're saying as well because of this money someone else has given me.
And Senator Brandis, you're on the ground floor of the legislature. What is the sense you get? You know, does the legislature want to talk about solar?
I think there is a growing chorus of legislators that realize that now is the time to talk about solar energy. I think the concern before about solar energy was really, you know, the discussion was really, well, how much subsidy should we subsidize this individual for putting solar on their roof? As the price of solar has come down, and I think within a few years will be very competitive with fossil fuels, I think that the time now is to discuss not so much the subsidy aspect of it, but the general policy discussions of what one should we allow, should we allow us to sell excess energy? That's one of the policy discussions taking place. I also filed a bill that said that you shouldn't be able to charge for the property tax. So it shouldn't, because you install solar on your roof, shouldn't increase the property tax that you pay, because we shouldn't charge for collection of sunlight. I think that was a policy issue that we can address this year. And then there are some other more technical tax aspects that I've tried to address as well. But I think the time is ripe now for the solar discussion. And I think, frankly, I think the utilities are they recognize now that discussion is going to take place. Whether they want it to take place or they don't want it to take place, I think the momentum now of the legislature has shifted, and you're seeing a much more willingness to discuss solar power.
Especially as that ballot initiative comes ever closer, certainly, as well.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to get your opinion on a May 11th article by the News Service of Florida. It talks about an impact statement by state economists as they're reviewing a ballot initiative that would, like your bill, allow these third-party sales. And the article says that if the initiative is approved, it would likely reduce the amount utility companies end up paying state and local governments. Last year, they paid almost $644 million in franchise fees, and that figure could decline if solar begins to provide even more services in utilities' territories. So what's your take on that trade-off, more solar energy versus maybe a decline in the government dollars?
Well, I think anytime we can shrink the size of government, that's a good thing. And to the extent that people can generate their own energy off their own rooftops, collecting the solar to the energy from the sun that's hitting their home, I think that's a positive thing. I think to the extent that we can reduce people's bills for a variety of reasons is a positive thing, whether it be lower franchise fees, whether it be they're not paying for the fuel off of the power companies. I think those are all positive things. I think the direction of Florida, and I think the direction of the country, is more towards solar than it is towards coal or other fossil fuels. And I think that's a very positive direction.
And I want to switch gears and talk, the legislature is half this equation. There's also the body that regulates state utilities, the Public Service Commission. And I should mention, we asked them to appear on the show and they declined to come. Eric, in your research, what has been their approach and how have they set policies regarding solar in the state?
Yeah, there's a lot of critics of the Public Service Commission. They say that they are too much in favor of the big utility companies, and they point to a couple of things that the Public Service Commission does. For instance, if you have panels on your roof, solar panels on your roof, you can sell some of the power back to the power companies. In Florida, you'll get about 2 to 3 cents per kilowatt hour, which is about 10 cents less than you pay for electricity. And supporters of solar will say that the Public Service Commission has set that so low because of the influence of the power companies.
And that's at the end of the year, the 2 to 3 cents when they collect everything and see how much excess has been generated over the entire year.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, and have there's been conversations about reforming the PSC as well? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, there are calls for that now, and there are a lot of people who are saying a lot of the commissioners have some connection to power companies. Have received money from them as when they were some of the Public Service Commission, their former legislators who received money from the power companies when they were in office. And there are calls for that now. We'll see if the state government does anything about it.
Okay. And I believe that is all the time we have right now for this segment. But I wanted to give the closing word to Senator Brandis. Senator, what would you like to see the legislature, how would you like to see it move on rooftop solar?
So a couple things. One, I think the game is changing on solar energy, and that's because you have people like Elon Musk coming out with battery technologies that I think will be on the side of somebody's home here shortly in Florida, and you're going to see that really change the dynamics and really be a paradigm shift for solar power, because you won't have to sell back to the grid. You'll be able to store that energy and utilize it all day long. And one of the big challenges with solar power is, how do I store it? And now that we are beginning to address that challenge, I think you're going to completely change the dynamics of solar power, and I think you're going to change the economics for solar power. The strongest thing that we can do is change the economics, and then the legislature will shift its position. It will have to shift it. People will demand that they shift, and will hold their legislators accountable. So I think what people need to do is to call their legislators and let them know that they want to see stronger solar policies in the state of Florida, and I think then you'll begin to see real change.
Okay. Well, that is all the time we have for this part of the show. I want to say thank you to Eric Bartner and Senator Jeff Brandis. Journalist Eric Barton is a contributor to the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting. He wrote the April article in Sunshine State, Big Energy Blocks Solar Power, and Republican State Senator Jeff Brandis serves St. Petersburg. Thank you to you both.
Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Topher Forges, and now we're going to be talking about the cost of solar and how it's playing a role both in the business and residential worlds. Joining us is Buck Martinez, Senior Director for Florida Power and Light's Office of Clean Energy. Thank you for joining us, Buck.
Well, thank you for having me.
And we are also joined by Reed Wilson, president of the FL Green Team, a solar energy company based out of Fort Myers. Wilson is also the president of the Florida Solar Energy Industries Association, which represents companies across the state and promotes the solar energy industry. Thank you for joining us, Reed.
Good afternoon.
And finally, we have Debbie Dooley on the line. She is the president of the Conservatives for Energy Freedom, a Tea Party activist. Dooley pushed for solar energy industry expansion in Georgia and is working in Florida to do the same. Thank you for being here, Debbie.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be on your show.
And you can join our conversation. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. So I want to start... There's always a conversation about cost and how much energy and how much solar will cost for a large scale utility operation and how much it'll cost for the for your home business. And Buck, tell me a little bit about FPL's plans for solar. In January, the company announced it's going to invest somewhere between $400 million and $420 million to build three solar energy farms.
Yeah, so first of all, thanks for the opportunity. We've been in the solar business for many years. Gosh, we've been in the business probably since the 1980s. We've always been a strong supporter of solar. We love solar, but I think we want to do solar in a manner that best meets the needs of our customers. So I think the debate has to have intellectual honesty, and some of the things that were being said by Mr. Barton, I think, are not factual. They're full of errors. So I like to have the opportunity, to address a number of those things. So thanks for the opportunity. We did announce three large solar projects. They're about 75 megawatts each. That's going to triple our solar in the state. You know, we built the first solar project in 2009. And at that time, we were the pioneers in this. As a matter of fact, President Obama came and commissioned the first project, which was at DeSoto County. And since then, we've been, actively studying. We've been working on a number of different initiatives, and now we believe that we can actually do cost-effective solar in a manner which will diversify the fuel mix for our state, as well as provide, continued clean solar opportunities for our customers.
I've heard the refrain before, that utility companies have said solar is just not cost effective for Florida ratepayers. Has anything changed to facilitate this larger investment by FPL? $400 million.
A number of things have changed. I think scale is a huge issue, right? So the cost of the solar panels have precipitously been coming down for years now, which is a good thing in the sense that it's good for our customers and allows us to bring in clean energy. The only negative is that, we have not been able to take advantage as a country of the manufacturing capabilities, and it's unfortunately been basically all sent to China. But so you have scale. You also have better efficiencies. So the industry is doing a great job of continuing to improve the efficiencies of the cell panels. So that's also been a huge issue. The bigger issue in Florida has been the low cost of electricity, and at least in our service territory, and that's been the biggest challenge as far as bringing solar in a cost-effective manner. So we believe that we're at a position now by taking advantage and leveraging some of our existing assets where we have already, we have some land, we've got some transmission, and we've got some capabilities to be able to bring in some of these large-scale projects in a manner which will be cost-effective with our grid.
And, there's what's cost-effective for the large company, and there's also, what's cost-effective for the consumer. And I'm wondering about in November, the Public Service Commission cut rebate programs until the end of 2015 and then also cut 90% of their energy efficiency goals. And it was reported that the utilities said that they were just too expensive. Can you tell me anything about what really contributed to the cost of these expenses?
Yeah, at the end of the day, solar has some inherent disadvantages, right? The sun doesn't shine 24 hours a day. We also have a lot of cloud coverage, so we have to take into consideration that when the sunshine is available, we leverage that. It's free fuel, but there's a capital cost associated with it. So to be able to overcome some of those disadvantages, you got to be able to build scale, and we've been able to now demonstrate that some of these projects are going to be cost effective. A lot of the niche projects that we had basically in the rebate programs and what have you, are just really not cost effective. So what happens is you, in essence, have a pool of money, and then the pool of money goes to the people that first sign up, and they get a nice rebate program. But unfortunately, those rebates are being paid by customers that don't get solar. And so at the end of the day, a lot of the projects are being subsidized by individuals that don't have solar for those that were getting the rebate. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think we have to continue to drive the efficiency of solar, the cost of solar, and we have to make smart decisions for our customers. And today, I'm proud to announce that here in the great state of Florida, our cost at the utility level are actually lower than they were 10 years ago by at least 10%. So, you know, in an industry that always gets challenged about, you know, when you look at hear commercials on TV about the cost of electricity, we are proud to say that our costs today are lower than they were 10 years ago. And I would challenge just about any industry, whether it's healthcare, education, any retail, to be able to stand behind us. So we're real proud of our record. That's why it's been really challenging to try to bring in cost-effective solar, because we continue to drive the cost of our system down. And part of that is due to, you know, not only leadership and management, but it's also a decision that was made years ago to begin to wean off foreign oil and begin to build natural gas capabilities. And there was a time when we had 40 million barrels of oil that were being purchased and burned. And today I'm proud to say that we basically weaned off all foreign oil, and we have a very little amount of foreign oil in our system. And that's only because that's to meet compliance for some of our assets that require dual burning.
Okay.
So when we do the testing, we actually burn the oil.
Well, I want to throw this. Sorry?
I would like to say, yes, this is Debbie Dooley. I would like to say a few things. Number one, FPNL, instead of taking advantage of Florida's natural resource of the sun, is going out west and participate in fracking ventures, a gas fracking venture that is somewhat risky, it's very expensive, and people need to understand that every time these government-created monopolies make a capital investment or have to build a new power plant, they make a profit off of the construction cost. So the more expensive something is, the more money they make. In Georgia, Georgia has the same amount of clouds and probably more clouds than Florida does. Georgia Power in Florida just purchased utility-grade solar at 6.5 cents per kilowatt hour. Georgia Power also supported a third-party leasing bill, sales and leasing bill, that was just signed into law by our governor. So I fully believe that these utilities are declaring war on solar. They're moving very slowly towards solar and other decentralized energy because they were trying to protect their profit level and trying to stop competition. I believe.
Well, you know what? With all due respect, I think you just missed what I said. We're going to be building 225 megawatts of solar. By the way, Florida Power and Light is not a government-owned entity. There's 55 utilities in the state of Florida. We're by far the lowest most cost-effective.
So I really don't. As I understand, let's step back for a second. And Debbie, you are talking about third-party sales. This is the basis of the initiative that your group, Conservatives for Energy Freedom, Floridians for Solar Choice, I believe Reed's group is also a big proponent of this, Florida Solar Energy Industries Association. You know, what is the basis and of this? What is your ballot trying to achieve?
We're trying to remove the barriers and allow solar to compete in the marketplace. Now, Floridians don't have the right to engage in commerce. If I have private property and I want to sell excess solar to my neighbors, I'm forbidden to do so. We believe that Floridians should have the right to engage in commerce and that the energy they produce on their private property should be theirs. There are government mandates. These monopolies were created by the government, and we believe in allowing choice. These this ballot initiative has zero to do with subsidies. It does not involve subsidies in any way, but there's a lot of outright false information and outright lies about this ballot initiative. I saw Faith and Freedom Coalition. They're apparently, joining Americans for Prosperity in a campaign of deception about the ballot initiative. And I think that's wrong, and it just allows Floridians the right to engage in Congress. Floridians have a right to keep more of the money they earn. That is pure and simple. They have the right to make money from selling power generated on their private property, and this ballot initiative will give that right.
And
I find that isn't 98% of your funding, Debbie, on the Florida Solar's Choice Initiative comes from outside the state. So I'm curious how
that's
Floridians are behind that.
So
we should know.
It's still well. Okay. So Debbie, more to the point, where are you in terms of this initiative, and maybe Reed can answer this, where are you in terms of this initiative getting onto the ballot? Because it has to jump through several hurdles in order to do so.
We are actually awaiting the Supreme Court ruling that would allow us to go on the ballot. We collected over 100,000 signatures in a little over 4 weeks' time. Our funding. One of the things I will tell you, I'm a staunch right-wing conservative. I'm one of 22 people that founded the Tea Party movement in 2009. And, I don't care where the money comes from. If someone wants to donate to advance free market principles in energy in Florida, I will gladly accept their donations. FPL and these government-created utilities use money collected from captive ratepayers to fight this initiative. They pay salaries. They have a PAC. They donate very heavily to elected officials in Florida to help buy influence. And, their money's coming from captive ratepayers. We don't have a captive customer base that is like a steady flow of money coming in, so we're raising money from all different sources. I'm in Washington, D.C. now. I'm meeting with people about donating, other conservatives donating to Floridians for Solar Choice. On the next report, $10,000 donation from Conservatives for Energy Freedom.
With all due respect, for us, we have the lowest cost rates of anybody in the state. 30% lower than nation. We have the highest reliability, and we have the cleanest profile of any generator. And yet I haven't heard anything other than where your donations are coming from. How are you going to improve that?
How are we going to improve that? By giving consumers choice. And you talk about your rate. How low is your rate when you combine the fees and all the other added fees on the power bills, and then you divide that among the kilowatt hours? You just can't go by the rate that you charge per kilowatt hours. Giving people freedom and the freedom to choose means something, and that means a lot. I believe
last time I checked, every customer in the state.
Bill.
Okay. So I want to bring Reed on this because he's been patiently listening in. Reed, we've talked about solar. I mean, you're on the ground floor. You're, installing these solar systems. You are going to customers. What incentives, especially in the light that, these rebate programs have been cut, what incentives do you think customers need to have to want to make that transition to solar?
Well, I don't know that that's really the point of this whole conversation. I mean, we are coming closer and closer to parity with electric rates by generating utilities, and I guess I should say monopoly utilities, and that's what the fundamental problem is here that I see, is that, Mr. Martinez's company, Florida Power and Light's business model, is the monopoly end of it, is being threatened, and certainly they're in business to sell energy. And, on one hand, it sounds like for residential people to have or smart commercial to have solar. It's not cost effective, but then, you know, they're introducing these big farms that they're going to build all this solar capacity. So the fundamental thing is that the business model is being threatened, and that, you know, we broke up the Bob Bell utilities monopolies, and inevitably that's what's going to happen with solar energy and power generation.
And regardless of, you know, who's funding what or where, you know, whatever's coming from, Buck, what do you make of the initiative of this idea that of selling to third parties? Because in the end, it will mean selling less energy from the utilities, right?
You know, today we haven't even taken a position on it. I mean, this is way too early in the game. I mean, I hear a lot of the rhetoric, but I don't hear any substance, and I still haven't heard anything related to how this is going to improve the service that our customers get today. I mean, we have an obligation to serve. So, I mean, they can talk all they want about the utility system. The reality is it's the best utility system in the world, on the planet. Today our customers get 99.9% reliability. Today they get the lowest cost. Today they get the highest emission, the cleanest emission in the state. And no matter where you live, no matter where you are guaranteed to be able to get clean energy at any given time of the day. So, you know, they talk about we are fearful of whatever it is they're doing. We're not fearful of anything. As a matter of fact, we take a lot of pride in our system. As a matter of fact, we welcome whatever, you know, analysis, whatever debate they want to have. But it's got to be an intellectually honest debate. And they got to come in with substance that basically says, this is how the customer is going to benefit. This is how the customer is going to have the opportunity. And, Ms. Doolittle, if I could, let me finish. And yet, excuse me, ma'am.
Hello?
Sure.
You know what? The fracking venture, if I may, what that is basically we have a supply that we need to provide our gas generators, right, which is the lowest cost today in the state. By purchasing some of the reserves in Oklahoma, what that is basically doing is ensuring that our customers have the ability to have a secure supply. Today, 100% of the purchasing of fuel is borne by the customer.
Okay.
That's the risk is borne by the customer.
Buck, unfortunately, we're running out of time. I'm going to give the final thought to Debbie. Where do you see this initiative going next?
Will gather the signatures that's required. People in Florida deserve choice. They deserve freedom. Conservatives don't like the government to tell them they must purchase their power from, you know, specific companies. They don't like that. And these utilities, you know, I think the initiative will pass. We conducted a poll and we used North Star Polling, which is a Republican firm that said 74% of Republican primary voters like solar. I'll give you another poll. NASCAR did polling. Two-thirds of NASCAR fans support solar. It will pass. We will get this on the ballot, and it will pass despite opposition from utilities trying to protect their bottom line, their profit level. It will pass.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have to today. For today, I want to say thank you to Buck and Debbie and Reed. Bark Martinez is Senior Director for Florida Power and Light's Office of Clean Energy. Debbie Dooley is the President of Conservatives for Energy Freedom. And Reed Wilson is the President of the FL Green Team and President of Florida Energy Industries Association. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
And after our break, John Davis will be discussing fracking in the Sunshine State. You're listening to WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.